Hi, I'm Asha Tomlinson.
And I'm David Common.
And we're hosts of CBC Marketplace. We're award-winning investigative journalists that want to help you avoid clever scams, unsafe products, and sketchy services.
Our TV show has been Canada's top investigative consumer watchdog for more than 50 years, but this is our first podcast.
CBC Marketplace podcast is available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning. I'm Chris O'Neill Yates in St. John's. We begin this morning in the Middle East, where Israel is preparing for a direct attack from Iran. A new report this morning suggests that U.S. officials are concerned a strike could happen in the next 2 days. For the latest now, let's go to Abby Guhadasan, who is following developments in London.
Israeli officials say they are getting ready for an unprecedented Iranian attack. The Wall Street Journal is reporting this could happen in the next 24 to 48 hours. Lina Khatlib is the director of the Middle East program at SOAS University in London.
I think what Iran wants more than anything is to save face and to be seen as having retaliated somehow. What it does not want is all-out war.
Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Khamenei will make the decision. He has already vowed to directly strike Israel after its embassy building was attacked last week in Syria, killing a top commander. But the response doesn't necessarily mean a strike on Israeli soil, says Mehran Kamrava, a professor of government at Georgetown University in Doha.
I think the retaliation would be either on Israeli diplomatic facilities somewhere around the world, or commercial interests.
The White House has reportedly reached out to Arab partners like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, asking for their help to defuse the situation. The U.S. has now restricted travel for all embassy and consulate staff in Israel out of an abundance of caution.
The Biden administration has been quite cognizant of the fact that Israel has been trying to drag the United States into the conflict.
Some analysts say Netanyahu is trying to deflect attention from Gaza by highlighting the conflict with Iran, where he and Biden are exactly on the same page. Abby Kualdas in CBC News, London.
As Sudan approaches the one-year mark in its civil war, a humanitarian aid organization is warning about a huge impact on children. Médecins Sans Frontières says severe malnourishment is widespread and deadly. In one camp for people displaced by the violence, the agency says a third of the children are acutely malnourished, with at least one child dying every 2 hours. Abdallah Hussein is with MSF in Sudan.
We have a nutritional crisis. It's a catastrophic nutritional crisis. The children that we screened in the camp of Zamzam is a tip of the iceberg. We're talking about only one camp. It could be much worse.
The fight between rival military factions began on April 15th last year. Since then, tens of thousands of people have been killed. Close to 9 million others have been forced from their homes. The head of Canada's spy agency is back in the hot seat this hour. The public inquiry investigating foreign election interference was supposed to wrap up earlier this week, but CSIS director David Vigneault has been recalled to face some pointed questions. Catherine Tunney tells us why.
So these we understand to be briefing notes that were prepared for the CSIS director.
For weeks, the inquiry investigating foreign election meddling has been dissecting classified documents, including clear warnings from the Canadian Security Intelligence Service about Chinese interference, typed out in stark briefing notes and made public this week.
Well, these are briefing notes that I never saw.
But the target of those briefings, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his office, testified that details on the page weren't always shared with them in person. Deputy Chief of Staff Brian Clough.
A briefing note presented to somebody who's briefing us does not necessarily mean that the person briefing chooses to actually relay that information.
The issue of who knew what when goes to the heart of the inquiry, which was triggered by allegations Trudeau's government was aware about foreign meddling but chose not to act. It's why Commissioner Marie-José Hugg decided to recall CSIS Director David Vigneault as a witness for a special hour of testimony this morning to grill Vigneault about whether he did omit information when briefing PMO. And if so, why? Catherine Tunney, CBC News, Ottawa.
Bell's CEO faced some tough questions from MPs examining the state of news media in Canada. Bell has been laying off thousands of workers, selling off radio stations, and ending many TV newscasts. As Rafi Bujikanyan reports, Miro Bibic's defense of those decisions did not sit well with the committee.
The industry's in flux due to technological disruption.
Mirko Bibic tried explaining his company's decisions as soon as he started talking. And as soon as the MPs started asking questions, they showed they were not impressed. From Conservative Rachel Thomas pointing out the money Bell has received in federal subsidies.
There's hundreds of millions of dollars that has been given to Bell. And yet, here we are discussing the cutting.
To Liberal Talib Nur Mohammed.
My question was about your compensation package. And you've answered that, in fact, it was approximately $13 million.
That's correct.
What does the average journalist working in your newsrooms earn?
Well, I wouldn't have that. It's a precise number.
To NDP leader Jagmeet Singh.
Your justification for laying off workers is because you had the consumers in mind? That does not make any sense at all to me, sir.
Oh, it makes very good sense because what we're trying to do...
Bell's CEO found himself targeted over the nearly 11,000 job cuts announced in two waves last June and this February, along with cuts in news programming at CTV stations owned by the company and the radio stations it is selling off. The committee of MPs is also looking at cuts in other news outlets, including CBC Radio-Canada. The corporation's president, Catherine Tate, who testified in January, will be back again next month. Rafi Bujikanyan, CBC News, Ottawa.
An economist in the Northwest Territories is sounding the alarm over the future of the mining industry. Graham Clinton says the territory has no plan to deal with decommissioning mines. In his recent report, Clinton warns of widespread economic impact. Juanita Taylor reports.
I am extremely concerned about our future.
Economist Graham Clinton says the lack of vision and planning in the Northwest Territories is the focus of his report. Titled Eyes Wide Open, he presented it to the City of Yellowknife earlier this week. The numbers in Clinton's findings are staggering. 1,500 jobs could be lost. Over 1,000 residents could leave the territory. Not a surprise, says Yellowknife City Councillor Steve Payne.
We've been talking about the issue of no exploration for years.
Diavik Diamond Mine is slated to close in 2026. Gahcho Kué's will likely follow 4 years later. And Ekati's future is dependent on underwater mining technology. Minister of Industry, Tourism and Investment, Caitlin Cleveland, is more optimistic about the territory's economic future.
Our resources are incredible.
Cleveland says she has been working with Diavik Diamond Mine on how to support its northern staff leading into their next career. Juanita Taylor, CBC News, Rankin Inlet, Nunavut.
Transport Canada is giving the owner of a New Brunswick sailboat an end-of-month deadline to move the vessel. At the start of winter, the boat became trapped by ice in the St. John River, but it has now sunk. Mia Urquhart has the details.
All that's visible of the sailboat, not a starship, are two masts stretching above the surface of the St. John River. 3 months ago, the owner told CBC he was confident his 13-meter vessel was sturdy enough to survive a winter frozen in ice. It now sits on the bottom of the river, and Transport Canada has given Jordan Tatton until April 30th to remove it or face fines. Local residents expressed concern about the sailboat for months, even before the river froze. Rob Tom lives in Greenwich and is a member of the local fire department. He says it poses a navigational hazard, and his department isn't equipped or allowed to help if a boater hits one of the masts and needs help.
When it comes out of the water, it'll be a sigh of relief for us, for sure.
Although Tom and others watched the sailboat slowly sink this winter, for the boat's previous owner, it came as a gut punch. Trevor Laird says a stranger sent him a message saying simply, "Somebody sank your boat."
I was floored, to be honest. I told my wife, it almost brought a tear to her eye. I was just like, what?
CBC tried to contact current owner Jordan Tatton, but he did not respond to interview requests. Mia Urquhart, CBC News, along the St. John River.
And finally... Your favorite cover bands won't be allowed to perform this song for much longer, or any Guess Who song written by Burton Cummings, according to a report in Rolling Stone magazine. Cummings is terminating the performing rights agreements for all of his songs. It is a major step, one that will cost him a lot of money and miss royalties. But Cummings says it is absolutely necessary. He's trying to stop a cover band that's been touring, pretending to be the real Guess Who. Get away from me. And that is your national and international news from World Report. I'm Chris O'Neill Yates in St. John's. This is CBC News.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.